All the dodges and hot springs sure can't help us. I'm gonna shoot my pistol, gonna shoot my Gatling gun. I'm gonna shoot my pistol, got to shoot my Gatling gun. You made me love you, now your man have gone.
Jerry Ward. For many years, professor of English at Tougaloo College in Tougaloo, Mississippi. I believe Jerry may be back there. I know he took a sojourn at the University of Mississippi for a period of time. And that was his poem from a collection called Black Poetry of the 80s from the Deep South, Word Up, edited by Kalamu Yassalam. I believe has been on this air a few times, if memory serves me. And here we are. Oh, I was just looking for a dateline on that piece by Jerry Ward. Dinner at Joplin's. Anyhow, the name of it. It's just past 12 o'clock, 12:03. And let me expand on my comments first. To any of his family, and certainly all of his friends who may be listening, sincere condolences on the loss of a good friend and a really outstanding colleague. A few years back here at WBAI, David Jackson passed on Wednesday last. His funeral will be held in Chattanooga, Tennessee, but plans are underway to hold a memorial sometime in September here. I want to say that the extraordinary thing about David Jackson, among many, many people you may find in this world who can be called dreamers, was the fact that David's dreams sustained him in a mighty way. There were times when I know, knowing that his spirit was crushed because things didn't move quickly enough, it didn't move in the directions he wanted them to go. David had the most abiding faith in one area of American life that perhaps has ever been made clear to me, and that is an abiding faith in the power and the nourishment provided by Black American music. And always in his efforts, David promoted the notion that to hear this music was in fact to hear the nation, whatever the color of your skin, and not to the exclusion of other forms, because in my experience David listened to everything. One of the last times we met, David Jackson and I had agreed to meet for breakfast, and we were going to go to a place in my neighborhood. Actually, I probably wasn't thinking clearly, because at the time he was coming relatively early in the morning, the place wasn't open for breakfast yet. Isn't that something? A New York place not open for breakfast at 8 o'clock in the morning. So I said, well, hey, David, that's cool. You know, just come on by the place and we'll do something at home. Well, he was this southern guy out of Chattanooga, Tennessee, and this northern colored kid raised in New York City, deciding on putting a soul breakfast together. And didn't we do it? As brothers in the barbershop would say, didn't we grease? Did we grease? Yes, sir. And what we did, we put together some scrambled eggs, some sausage links, and sausage patties. I'm sorry, Gary Nell, if you're listening, hey, man, you know, got to do this sometime. And we fixed some pancakes with a very special syrup that's been lying around the house a little while. And then David's eyes widened. I said, okay, look, man, while we do, we'll get all that together, but put on hold for just a second before you actually throw the eggs and hot grease and all that, because I'm going to bake some biscuits. And David's apparently was under the impression. He said, well, you mean like some Bisquick stuff, right? I said, no. I'm going to bake some biscuits. But we, you know, moving the ingredients around, hand me that, give me that, you know, let's do this. All right, start pouring the milk. And we put together a batch of biscuits, sat down, and let gluttony overwhelm us. You hear what I'm saying? We ate the eggs, we ate the pancakes, we ate those biscuits, we drank orange juice, we drank coffee. And incidentally, the biscuits, David decided that the biscuits had to have two things as they popped out of the oven. That was butter and honey. You know, he said, forget about, you know, marmalade and any of the rest of these, you know, English concoctions. We're going to do it where you do it at home. We're going to put honey on these biscuits. And we spent that entire morning essentially in conversation about black music and the people who performed it, people who promoted it, the people who were involved with it. And I'd like to share with you, from that memory of not so many years ago, it always seems longer when someone has passed away, but some of the music I do recall. We're going to let you hear some of it by way of saying to David Jackson, big fella, DJ, you know, in the absence of us being able to sit down and roll a fat one, I'm just going to leave you with some traveling music.
Over the government, the minister blamed foreign intervention. lovely hymn. The boom, boom. The east and the west, the sun pays plenty more. Come and see Big Trouble, here for Africa. I say, come and see Big Trouble, here for Africa.
Who can it be? listener-sponsored, non-commercial WBAI in New York, 99.5 FM.
Now, what you say? I'm walking all over this place, man, because we're having a good time. What cheese show is funky? Cheese, you're trying to please, huh?
David Jackson, a little traveling music, more to come. We will talk to you briefly, particularly for those of you who may want to address, particularly those words, I would say, most especially the words of Angelo Herndon. Remember, we're talking about more than nearly 70 years ago, a guy who was organizing in the South, in Georgia, albeit Atlanta, on behalf of working people, member of the Communist Party. We're going to talk about living dangerously and a guy who, on more than one occasion, risked his life. What was happening at the time, there was so little work in the area. The depression had hit that part of the country so hard that workers who literally couldn't find no work, there was none, and everybody willing to admit that, turned to the state and said, is there relief for us? Is there a way we can feed and clothe our children, keep our families together until the economic system upturns again? And the state's essential answer was, no, there isn't, even though money had been allocated for just that purpose, emergencies. The state, apparently, state officials outraged that the workers had come together. Now, isn't that fascinating? The workers had come together, black and white workers, had put aside other things and other histories, actually, and said, look, this is about the working class in battle with the ruling class. And even then, a man like Angelo Herndon was willing to risk all, and did, in fact, escaped only because I certainly believe the power of his words. Addressing his own jury, they could have sentenced him to the electric chair, and that would have been the end of that story, in all likelihood, unless through the offices of the Communist Party, as was the case in the Scottsboro Boys just a year before in the neighboring state of Alabama. So, when we do get back online, as I said, we'll take some calls now. You know, we go to 1:30, and I do want to deal with two pieces in recent publications. The Dirt and the New Machine, that's about something called coltan. High-tech corporations like Sony and Nokia can't make their products or profits without coltan, a dense black mud dug by hand, one pail at a time. All right? In Central Africa. That should come as no surprise. And also I want to take a peek at recent writing by Patricia Williams in The Nation. Diary. Get it right. Diary. Try it again. Diary of a Mad Law Professor. WBAI, you're on the air. Hello. Whoa! What was that?
Good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon.
Oh, my brother, the first question I must ask you is, I don't know if you saw Nightline last night.
I did not.
All right, it was about, I don't know if anyone else caught it too. It was about Louis Armstrong and his tapes.
Mm-hmm.
And he had made, you know, quite a few tapes where he, down through the years, where he would talk about whatever with friends or other race, whatever. He apparently loved the tape recorder and talking into it. And what got me about it was how surprised, because I guess the newsman, I can't think of his, I think it was Dave Marsh, how surprised he was to hear, you know, to really hear Louis just speak, particularly when it came down to race, because I think a lot of people in this country, their feeling of Louis Armstrong as a man who, you know, the man who grins and he's with the handkerchief and all. And they don't know. This is a man. if you know what I'm saying.
I hear you clearly.
So it was, you didn't catch it, but that last night. And the only other thing I wanted to say was that I love your show.
Thank you.
And I caught the tail end of it. And, I mean, I just came in and I've been watching Reverend Sharpton since he got out, and I think the thing I'm glad of is to see that he's out and he's still feisty. The thing that I expected but I found stupid was I turned on certain television stations where they would ask people the man in the street.
Mm-hmm.
And it pretty much broken down as I figured it would be. Most black people will keep on doing it, and you know, he'll still be strong. And most white people were, well, he needs to close his mouth and stay out of trouble. Some things never change.
Thank you for calling.
Take care.
BAI, you're on the air. Good morning.
Good morning.
Or I should say good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
It's past noon.
I have to turn off my radio.
Please do.
Oh, listen, I am so happy to hear you, that you're still on the station, and I'm one of the the listeners that goes all the way back to the church.
All right.
And, of course, I know that BAI goes as part of their process to go through this periodic change and so forth. And but I am still grateful for the station, and I urge everybody to support it, and let's get through these troubles. But thank you for the issues that you're bringing up, Clayton. And one of the things I want to comment on is the joy that I got from David Jackson.
Wasn't he a wonderful person?
Oh, my goodness. In those days when they used to have those,
him and James Brown.
Stormy, do you know how many tapes I have of them?
Do you really?
Oh, I have.
Oh, I
started to say I have 4,000, but I don't want anybody to know that I'm one of those pack rats.
Mm-hmm.
And I have WBAI tapes going all the way back. And I remember the old days very well when my daughter, who's now in her 50s, they surprised me for my birthday and gathered up all the coins that they had. And she must have been about 13 or 14. She took it downtown to the church to buy a membership for me for my birthday. And that was one of the proudest presents that I got.
Wow. Listen, that program, Stormy Monday, if there's an example from our archives of classic radio.
Oh,
these
talk about radio. Why don't these people understand? This is the most precious thing. Yeah. One of the most precious things mm-hmm. that I have is the radio.
All
and
right.
WBAI is the prime example of what radio can be
mm-hmm.
and how important it is to people like me.
Listen, we will keep all folks out there informed. As I said, there is planned a memorial for David sometime in September.
Precious person.
We'll keep you on top of that.
A precious person.
I agree.
All right, then.
Thank you for calling.
Good luck to you, Clayton.
Thanks a lot.
Bye-bye.
WBAI, you're on the air as we approach 12:30. Hello.
Hello?
Yes.
I have a two-part question.
Please.
Okay, first part is concerning the latest activity at the station.
What latest activity?
Well, that I'm aware of, anyway.
Mm-hmm.
I would like to know if you...
Well, wait a minute. What is the latest activity?
Well, I'm saying it. Was my question. I'd like to know if you feel any outrage at all.
Well, wait a minute. You have to tell me. I don't know what you're talking about.
Okay.
Any outrage about what?
Okay. Concerning Amy Goodman being taken off the air.
Well, to my knowledge, she hasn't been taken off the air.
Well... They're playing the old tapes.
Mm-hmm.
She's not active. This is old stuff going back years. She's not live anymore.
Well, she is live, actually. She's not live here, but she is live in other parts of the network.
Well, but why isn't she live there?
Well, you'll have to ask management about that. I don't know. In part...
this is the second part of the question.
Okay, wait a minute. You asked me a question. Let me finish answering you. In part, this is her decision. Okay? Nobody kicked her out of here. She made the decision that she would prefer to broadcast elsewhere because, in her judgment, she was not safe here. All right? Okay?
Is that why there are laws that she is involved with lawsuits now to bring her back to the station
where
she would feel safe?
You'll have to ask her that. I don't know.
Okay, well, you know, most people, most listeners, I think...
How do you propose to speak for most listeners?
Okay, look, the next part of the question is this. In my opinion, the thing that made BAI really great over the years is that you could say anything you wanted over the radio without being censored.
That's not true.
And
you cannot say anything you want to say over the radio,
well,
as you full well censored. Know. As you full well know, you can't do that.
Has it been censored?
Well, there are things...
It's live. What do you mean you can't say anything if it's live?
Do you want an answer, or do you want to keep talking
yourself?
I can
answer my question.
Okay, well, let me answer your question. When you say that the history of WBAI was a history of your being able to say anything you want to, that is not true. There are things you cannot say on this air or any other air. You know what FCC regulations are like. We didn't impose those restrictions that agency did. There are many things that you can't...
I was talking about the listeners.
What about the listeners?
When the listeners call up, simply live, like now, for example,
okay.
There was nothing precluding them from expressing a certain point of view.
Is there anything precluding you from expressing a point of view?
Well, I don't know. You usually don't permit that.
Let's not talk about usually. I'm asking you a very simple and a very direct question, which can bring, I hope, a yes or no answer.
Okay.
Are you being precluded from saying anything on the air?
Well, may I say something?
Go ahead.
Okay. In my opinion, okay, I'm going to cut right to the chase, okay? Approximately, to my knowledge, there have been about 40 people banned and fired. Is that approximately correct?
No, I don't believe it is.
Well, what do you believe?
First of all, let's start with one part of the question. You cannot fire volunteers. I mean, that's just an absurdist notion.
Well, let me refine that. Let us say that since the new management came on board,
mm-hmm.
Whether someone was a volunteer or, you know, was actively, was considered an employee, what have you.
Mm-hmm.
Approximately how many people, to your knowledge, have been removed from BAI?
The figure being quoted by, I suppose it's characterizing itself as a representative dissident group, is 23.
Okay. I'm not sure of the numbers. I thought it was higher.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And the second part of this question, did you know most of these people, even superficially?
Why do you say
know who they were?
Wait a minute. Why do you say even superficially? What is that? I know all of them.
Okay.
What do you mean superficially?
Okay, fine.
What does that mean?
Then what percentage of these people were black?
I can't answer that.
I have no idea.
Well, wait a minute. Relax, friend. Just slow down a little bit, okay? What I'm saying to you as I think about it, probably more than half, actually.
More than half?
Yeah.
Would you say three quarters?
I really don't know. In point of fact, I don't know all of the 23 personally.
I know who they are
in the sense... Well, I don't know the color. I mean, I wouldn't have known, for example, that... what's the guy, the health guy, Bob? What's his last name?
Bob Letterer.
Bob Letterer. I mean, I'd only heard Bob on the air. I didn't know whether he was black or white.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you said you knew who they were.
Well, I do know. You're not paying attention.
Oh, maybe not.
I know who Bob Letterer is if I hear Bob Letterer on the air.
I see.
Okay?
Okay. That's great. Now, you know...
So what is your point?
My point is this. You said at least half.
Yeah.
Or approximately half.
Maybe half. Yeah.
Okay. Now... My follow-up question on that is simply this. Utrecht Leeds is being projected constantly, even by her supporters at the station, both on the air and people calling up, as being involved in some racial conflict, a fight for black rights, okay? This is the projection. And furthermore, if you oppose Utrecht Leeds, if you don't like her, you don't like what she's done, you are called a racist.
Who called you a racist?
Okay, look, this is...
Wait a minute, I'm asking you the question. You say if you oppose her, I assume you oppose her.
I have
heard, you been called a racist?
May I answer? May you?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. I've listened to the station... you know, since the 60s. I've been a supporter that time, okay? So I have listened very closely, and I've heard people make comments very unfavorable to Utrecht, including myself. And then someone will call up just a bit after and categorize myself or others as being racists.
May I respond?
Go ahead.
Okay. What I'm saying is that's their opinion. You express one opinion and they expressed another. I thought that was what this radio station was supposed to be about.
Well, that's the problem. If you oppose someone on the basis of not what color they are, but on the basis of their actions.
Mm-hmm.
And then the party line here is that...
But that's your view. That's a view you're taking.
Well,
I don't always agree.
How did I get this view? I got this view by listening to the station and listening to the comments.
Well,
and,
so do others get their view from listening to the station and listening to the comments.
Right,
and some of those people don't agree with you.
Right. So you would say then that there is a possibility that my view, that the one that I'm sharing now with the audience, could very well be correct.
No, I don't share that view.
You disagree with that view?
Yes, I do.
I see. Well, you know, to the best of my knowledge, and even from what you've said, the number of the people that have been fired, many of them are black, in fact.
So what?
Most of them are black.
What
so I want to drive the point home for all those people that I'm sure are going to call up after me.
Yeah.
Call me some kind of a racist or this or that.
Don't flatter yourself, friend.
Don't
flatter yourself. Nobody cares that much about what you're saying.
We'll see. You don't speak for everybody, do you?
Yes, sir, neither do you.
Well, fine. I just think this is going to happen based on past experiences.
But here's what you can speak to now. Let's speak to this now.
I'm going to say this.
No, you're not going to say anymore. Say goodbye.
Oh, no, now you're cutting me off because I'm being critical.
Say goodbye.
Fuck you.
Okay, now, all right, hold on before we take another call. You see, this is an example of what we're talking about. That is the center of the dissident viewpoint. When they aren't threatening people, when they aren't threatening the lives of people, children, this is what they use the airway to do. You see, you know, the guys say, yeah, well, we can say anything we want to because we're listeners. And I'm sure in his instance, he'd say, hey, I'm white and male. I can say or do anything I like. You see, and this is the result. We give, hopefully, at least we thought, you give an opportunity to people to say things, but you cannot disagree with them. You cannot have an alternate view. Otherwise, they, descend into this apoplexy or infantilism that causes them to outburst in that way. WBAI, you are on the air. Hello.
Good afternoon, Clayton.
Good afternoon.
I'm so glad. I've been holding on a long time, and I'm so glad that I'm after that guy that was just on the phone.
Don't call him a racist now, because suffer a stroke. Man. You know, you don't want
to. Well, I hope he doesn't suffer a stroke, and I hope he lives enough a long time for him to realize that possibly what he's doing, I'm not going to say that he's wrong, but that he's not giving everybody a chance, and he's not really realizing what he's doing. I think he was very fair to him by letting him speak, and then he's going to turn around and end it by saying that to you.
Mm-hmm. Well, again, let me say this to you. The so-called dissident community, the so-called exile community, has been using this language and these tactics throughout this period of turmoil at the station.
Yeah,
and
I know.
That, in my judgment, is why there has been no resolution of these conflicts. Because they take the position that it is my way or the highway. There is no disagreeing with them. There is no saying that we have questions. They are right, and that's it. There's just no more to be said. The fact is, and I agree with you, incidentally, we thought we were giving the guy an opportunity to talk. He said, you don't get a chance to talk? Well, okay, go ahead and talk.
Because
the minute you say simply, I don't agree with you, then this is what you get. And I want to say again, so that everybody is clear, this is the hallmark of our so-called dissident community. And what I find astonishing, you know, and during a period approximately from mid-January until well into February, the N-word was directed to me on this air by people calling up as representatives of the dissident community, and not one call ever came in to disavow that or to condemn that kind of behavior. So this is what we're dealing with. You can call up and denounce me, denounce the general manager all they want, because they are unable to look at their own behavior.
But Clayton, I want to say this too. I have to disagree with you to a point on that statement, because I don't think it's everyone.
I didn't say it was everyone. I said this is representative, in my judgment, of where the vocal portion of the dissident community
is
coming
from. I'll tell you this. In the beginning, I didn't particularly agree with everything that had taken place, but I learned to accept and try to listen and understand both sides of the people that was calling in, which is the listeners and also management.
Mm-hmm.
And I've gotten myself to a point now where I try to lift my spirit and my soul so high that I don't allow these things to affect me anymore. I'm able to listen to the ones that I don't particularly might care for, or to sometimes even the things that they're saying, because
mm-hmm.
I learned also that a person doesn't say wrong things all the time. Somewhere along in life, something that they say is going to apply to you later on.
Caller, let me...
You can't just say, well, because they're saying something wrong now, you throw everything out that they say. And I think that's what a lot of people are doing.
Caller, let me commend you for that statement, but because this portion of this program... it was my hope that people, and you are representative of what I hope was going to happen. If people call up, you can disagree. You can say, I may have taken one position at one point. I feel on the basis of the experiences that have occurred since then. That's fine. Nobody disagrees with that. But when you have these belligerents calling up who want to pound you into believing what they believe, then I think we lose sight of what this service is. Let us remember, this is a radio station.
What life is about.
Okay.
You realize that there is so much more in life than about sitting up here and fighting and arguing.
You have
about,
it. Incidentally.
This one is not a good program director, or this one is not a good journalist. I mean, from what I can hear and the time that I've been listening to WBII, so many people have such important questions to offer and to give, and to be sitting up there wasting time fighting, fighting the way that they have been fighting. I just don't understand it. It really hurts me.
Let's look again. You know, I hope you'll be able to continue listening before we leave today. We want to talk about this business that's going on in the Congo, where a very important substance is being mined. And once again, we see the manipulation of Western powers to recolonialize that part of the world. These are the issues.
Yes.
What's going on between Palestinians and Israel? These are the issues. What is going to happen in Durban, South Africa? That's an issue. What we have heard, the voices of Angelo Herndon, I think it's incredibly important for people to know that at a time that precedes most of us, perhaps listening to this air, one man was standing for what was right for black and white workers. Isn't that what we should be hearing about on WBAI? I would hope so.
That's right.
Hey, thank you for calling.
All right, Clayton, take care.
WBAI, you're on the air. Hello?
Not completely.
Not completely. Wow. Yeah, is that another radio? Is that another radio program? Is somebody watching TV there? Okay, we're going to move on. WBAI, you're on the air. Hello.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
I'm Edward.
Edward.
Yeah. Clayton.
Yes.
A couple of observations and a comment. First of all, back in the day, I used to hang with Charlie Russell. Are you in touch with him anymore?
Charlie is today living in San Diego. He is writing, I know. I believe if he hasn't, he's very close to completing a novel, and I think he's done some other nonfiction writing as well. But Charlie moved back. You know, he's originally from the West Coast,
right?
And he moved back there some years ago. And when last I was in touch with him, he was living in San Diego.
Okay. Comment about the institution of. The WBAI and stuff. And man, this is a protracted struggle. Just stay strong.
Okay.
And hang in there.
Hey, we're trying.
This controversy, really helps to better understand, what all of this is really about. I wonder sometimes if some of these people understand, the relevance or the importance of language, because one can ask a question clearly, but they have an agenda, and if it's not their way, then there is no game at all, and it's impossible, to negotiate or to have honest dialogue.
Well, let me give you an example of how that plays itself out. Many years ago, I was visiting an aunt and uncle who lived in Hartford, Connecticut, and they bought me a brand new softball, which I took to the playground. And, you know, we were playing ball, and then I realized that I had to go with my aunt. She had an appointment. I had to go with her. So I picked up the ball, and I said, "Hey, fellas, I have to leave." So I was that kid who says, "I'm taking my ball and going home." You know, I it didn't occur to me to say, "Well, hey, Joe, let me leave the ball with you. I'll get it another time." I'm reminded of that with these people. Again, the term "my way or the highway." I'm the kid, I'm taking my ball and I'm going home if things don't go my way. There is this kind of childishness associated with this notion. The other thing that disturbs me, a caller earlier today on the previous program said, talked about the good old days. You know, the BAI is no longer what it once was. Well, very few institutions in our society are what they once were.
Thank God they are.
Exactly. So this notion that people want to turn the clock back continually, you hear this again and again. Let's go back to the way it was. Because why? We're afraid of the way it could be. You know, we're afraid to find out what might happen if we moved forward instead of backwards. It's absolutely astonishing to listen to this. And
but you know, there's another, you know, heavy, you know, race game and class game that gets played, you know, in all of this. There was someone that mentioned earlier today about the program that was on Nightline last night, you know, and it was some stuff about Louis Armstrong.
Yes.
And I didn't see the whole program, but, you know, it didn't serve a good purpose, I don't think.
Well, you know, there was a recent article in the New York Times and a subsequent rebuttal response by Stanley Crouch in the Daily News. And essentially what it was, the article in the Times said, gave you the impression that Louis Armstrong hated black people, that black people had never done anything for him, and he didn't want to have anything. And anybody who knows anything about the history of the man knows that that is just patently false. But this was the effort being promoted by the writer of this piece. Now, Louis Armstrong, I'm sure, over a period of years, said a lot of things in a lot of situations. But in my judgment, Louis Armstrong was, to the extent one could be, given where he was and what he was doing, was what my father would have called a race man. Right? A lot of people don't know how he stood right in the face of a group of reporters and condemned the United States for the actions that had been taken before the intervention at Little Rock. How he stood right up and said, look, I won't go on another State Department tour as long as the racist practices that are going on in this country continue. So we're not talking about some guy who should only be remembered for waving a handkerchief and grinning at us.
Well, I think that part was inserted in there, but it was all kind of a setup because they use their talking heads to confirm or refute almost anything that Louis Armstrong said, or people who challenged him, mostly black or black musicians. And it was like white boys determining who was correct and who wasn't. I mean, and we see this all the time.
Newsflash.
Everybody go see Lumumba and Life
and Death. Yeah,
very important things.
They are both very important pieces of work.
Again, man, stay strong.
Thank you very much. I appreciate
I hope that we all get through this.
Let's hope so.
Okay.
Take care. All right, as we approach 1 o'clock, it's 12:51, WBAI, you're on the air. Hello.
Hello?
Yes.
Yeah, listen, there's just one thing I want to say to you, Clayton. I don't think that when you told a gentleman, say goodbye, and then mm-hmm. he used a bad word,
mm-hmm.
that it was all his fault.
Fault for using that kind of language on the radio. Don't try to defend that, man. Where are you coming from?
Do you have to tell a listener to say goodbye?
Hey, the point is we can lose our license for language like that, okay? You can't lose your license for saying to somebody, say goodbye.
Can't you think of another way to
why
end
should
the
I?
Conversation?
Why should I?
But by saying say goodbye.
But why should I think of another
it's
way?
It's like talking to him to a kid.
Well,
he's not a kid.
Who was he talking to?
He was talking to you.
Well, who was he talking to in his final response?
He had a conversation with you. He was pressing his point. And at some point, you felt that he said enough. And you
yeah.
said say goodbye.
Okay, and you're saying that's worse than what he said.
There's I'm not comparing. I'm talking
well,
about what
you what
said.
Are you saying about what he said? Tell me, wait a minute, hold it. Just hold up one second. I'm asking you to tell me, and then we'll get back to what I said. I'm asking you to give me a characterization of what he said at the end of his conversation. Tell me how you feel about that.
I don't remember. All I remember
oh, stop it. You didn't hear what he said after that.
Did you
hear what he said after that?
You want to hear something?
Yes.
Say goodbye.
Very good. I applaud you. You know, and this is an example. Here's a brother, I would almost assure you, telling us, I have to defend the indefensible. He knows what the guy said at the end of the program, and he knows the jeopardy that puts your license in. If you have that guy, we don't screen calls here. All right, we don't do that. But I think when enough is enough, enough is enough. And when this caller calls back again, we will remember you, and we may find out where you live. WBAI, you're on the air.
Yeah, hi, Clay. It's Jeff. Hey.
Hello.
How are you?
All right.
You know, well, first of all, a thought and then a question. You know, I had suggested to the station manager I know months ago, you know, just like, let's get the Dissonance on the air for a three-hour special and get it done.
Why? Why should you do that?
Yeah, you know why? I tell you, because this is a pain in the you-know-what.
What is a pain?
Well, this whole constant, it never ends. And what I'm kind of suggesting
Well, why do you think it's going to end by having people scream at each other for 3 hours?
No, I tell you what. This seriously, I talk to her about this a lot. Because I think that if you did that on a particular time in a day, if you made a 2 or 3 hour situation without, hello?
Yeah, we're
okay.
here.
Without the distance screen back and forth, let them get it out, make the point, and done with it. And then what happens, Clay, is that the next time they call, it's like you had yours. You see, I think half the frustration goes to the fact that they say, we haven't had our voice heard.
Oh, that's nonsense.
Well, I know it is also.
Foolishness,
I agree with Clay. Listen to me. I agree with you, but there are more important things that are going on in the world.
Absolutely.
I mean, I've said this to you, Hamilton, also. But
okay, let me hold up just a second.
Yeah.
Hugh Hamilton and I share something when we take calls on the air.
Right.
And we share the malady of the listener who has paid absolutely no attention
yep.
to what's been done in the program.
You're right.
Nobody has talked about a single thing that went on in the first part of this program. Except
that's
the woman,
I want to do.
Except the woman who called up with her remembrance of David Jackson.
That's what I want.
Nobody
to do.
Talking.
But you don't. But because I'm saying it is interruptive when we get these kinds of calls.
But why do you do it? Why don't you call up and say, hey, here's an issue to discuss?
I want to discuss it through the slavery museum that they're proposing in Charleston, but I'm just trying to make a point first.
Why make that point first?
Because it's frustrating, because we're not having the time to discuss the issues of the world, Clayton.
Hey, you have had so much airtime starting in December.
Yeah.
And I am telling you, were you here
right.
to listen to the comments? Again, let me go back to something.
I'm not a dissident, by the way, Clay.
I'm not suggesting you're a dissident. I'm saying
how can we, like, put a stop? It's like
you can't. You cannot put a stop to it. That's
well,
not going to happen.
You know, it's like I told Hugh also, because we have a lot of dialogues together about, by the way, issues of the South, because that's my area of interest. But what I'm just saying is, it's like this is, I am telling you, it is getting in the way of important
Well, certainly,
stuff going
but
on.
As long as you have a dissident community, as represented by this caller a bit back, who is saying essentially the only position is our position.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, in response to that, and let me be clear about something because
he acted in an infantile manner.
Right,
ridiculous.
Let me just say this.
Yeah.
My position on this is if you have been declared an enemy, that means you have an enemy. And I take my wisdom on this from Colin Powell, an old soldier, and I'm perhaps an old soldier in that sense as well. When you talk about the enemy, you find the enemy, you isolate the enemy, and you destroy the enemy. These people have put themselves in the position of being enemies. This conflict is not going to end, in my judgment, and let me be clear about that, until the dissidents, until this so-called exile community is destroyed. Unequivocally. That's what's going to happen to change any of this. Now, you people can start talking about, gee, that's so... Well, hey,
no.
They continue to be the enemy, and in that regard, in my view, the enemy must be destroyed.
I mean, I had a number of conversations with Hugh about the fact, for instance, when Ashcroft was coming and all this stuff, that every these major issues that affect you and me, black and white, or whoever it is, together... are being put to the side.
Yes.
There is no time devoted to this stuff. It's like, hello, we're living in a very, very dangerous time. And for this constant, it's like, you know, and that's why I suppose I was trying to come up with a way to say,
well,
okay,
I don't think
here's 2 hours, get out and do it. Like, you know.
3 hours not going to do it. Yeah. Incidentally, have you read this piece we mentioned, The Dirt and the New Machine, in the New York Times Magazine?
Yes. Yeah.
You have read it?
Yeah.
Okay, well, we had hoped, and we will, actually, to make a full discussion on that, because leads us directly to the conference in Durban. If this is what is going on, let's connect the dots.
Exactly. I couldn't agree with you more. I wanted to ask you if you saw the piece about the proposed slavery museum
in
South Carolina.
I did, yeah.
Because this is, in fact, what Hugh and I have been talking about is possibly in the fall doing a series of Voices of the South. This, to me, is a rather astonishing situation that's going on down there. I just wanted to find out what your opinion is and what you think.
Well, let's do this. You know how to reach us here at this program. Let's have that discussion.
Okay, I would love to.
All right.
I really would. You take care of yourself.
You will. You as well.
Okay.
WBAI, you're on the air. Hello.
Yeah, hello.
Yes.
Listen, I did want to say something about part of the programming. I wanted to say that it's interesting to hear your background, cultural background, knowledge of the scene, the music, the arts, the literature around here. I feel that James Baldwin is one of the greatest geniuses of our time. In his complex and tortured way of saying things and getting at all sides of the problem, bearing his soul, he's got a lot to... He's just fantastic, just moving every time you go through and you get other levels of what he has to say.
I agree.
And you can imagine that introduction is to get into something where I do disagree a little, where I think you're not always up to the same level of quality of culture and intelligence that you show when you're doing, when you're letting us know about what you've seen and lived and studied about. You know, his intellectual honesty was real important. I don't think you're playing completely fair all the time. For example, when someone...
Caller, just hold up 1 second and let us ID the station. This is WBAI 99.5 in New York. It's 1 o'clock. Go ahead, caller.
Okay. You know, when that guy said, can't say anything on the air, you jumped right in and said, you can't, you know what he meant. You know...
Well, wait a minute. I said to him, aren't you allowed to say what you want to say on the air?
No, that's
what we said to him.
No. You took him literally. He said you can say, used to be able to say anything you wanted.
Well, that's never been true.
But you know what he meant. I'm not going to believe it.
Tell me what he meant.
He meant that.